Ramsey TV.
Would you like to hear something rich? I'll give you something rich. Listen to this. It was suggested by a commenter on YouTube yesterday that we, who believe in the sovereignty of God, that nothing can exist or nothing can happen apart from God causing it to exist and causing it to happen, we are gutless. We just don't have the guts or the courage to believe that we have a limited free will, or that we have free will, total free will, and that if we had any courage whatsoever, we would rise to the occasion and admit that yes, we do in fact control much of our lives directly apart from God's influence. From the edge of the bottom of the Floridan Peninsula, this is your friend and mine, Martin Zender, once again making sense for a living. Guts? I'd like to ask this, how does it take guts to believe the most popular philosophy on the face of the earth? That's my question. It takes guts to believe the most popular philosophy on the face of the earth, that the only people who believe in free will are all religious people and all worldly people. I wonder how many people that comprises if you took a cross-section. I'd probably say 7.9999 billion people. Talk about a tailwind. Talk about going with the flow. How does it take guts to believe that you're the captain of your own life? Holy Moses, that's the current of the era. That's the coin of the realm. Do you know what takes guts? I'll tell you what takes guts. It takes guts to ignore everything you see outside, to ignore your emotions and your feelings about yourself, to ignore all your fanciful philosophies about the world, and to believe the word of God, and to stand by it, and to proclaim it against the tide of the world. Now, that takes guts. And if you want to have guts, then join the little, tiny, nice little club who believes that all is out of, through, and into God. Yes, today is the day I will bring to you a talk that I have titled Destroying the Robot Argument. But first, I was outside this morning, and I started thinking about being on an airplane, probably because I can hear the jets taking off and landing from the Fort Lauderdale Airport, which is just right over there. And I thought, why is it that anyone on an airplane is thrilled to death to hear that the pilot is in control of the plane? I have not yet met one passenger on an airliner who hopes the pilot is only partially in control of the plane, or who has limited control of the plane. Most people are quite happy if it were to be reported to them that the pilot has total control of the airplane. Nobody I've ever encountered on an airplane would resent that, would be offended by it, would feel belittled. Like, why aren't I in control of this airplane? I wish I was in control of it. I don't like the fact that the captain has total control of the airplane. No, everyone is thrilled. Yes, the captain has total control of the plane. That's the way we like it, and we hope it stays that way. Let me ask you this. Why is it that a pilot having total control of an airplane is acceptable, and yet God having total control of his creation is repulsive to some people? That's a tough one, isn't it? The only thing I can figure out is that People welcome the idea of not being in control on a plane and thankful for the idea that somebody else is, that they can read People magazine and drink orange juice. But when it comes to life, suddenly there's a panicked grabbing for control and a resentment that someone is actually in total control of the airplane of life. Ah, the airplane of life. We are on the airplane of life. And you know why you have not personally crashed, or that the world is not blown up, or that somehow this life is still going on after 6,000 years of humanity? It's because there's a pilot. Yeah, there's a pilot. The pilot is God. And I would hope that anyone would be just as assured to hear that God is totally in total control of this life as it would be to hear on an airplane that that the pilot is totally in control of the airplane. Nobody on an airplane says, "Man, I wish I had some control of this plane. If only the pilot would just let me fly it for 10 minutes. Even though I have no training in how to fly an airplane, I have no experience in flying an airplane. Nevertheless, I just feel that I need to have some control of this thing. So please let me into the cockpit, ask the pilot to go to the bathroom, and I'll operate this thing." You know what? You'd be scared to freaking death to even touch the yoke of a 767. Scared to death. You wouldn't do it in a million years. And yet, you seem fearless. Fearless. In taking the yoke of life. And thinking that you are the better controller of your circumstances, of your moods, of your actions. What audacity. Don't you realize that this is a machine far more complex than a 767? That the details of your life and the things that happen to you and the things that you think, when you think them, how you think them, you don't think that's more intricate, more detailed, more hopelessly beyond your ability to manage than a 767? Why is it that you'd be terrified to even touch the yoke of a 767, and yet you are screaming and insisting that you must have at least some control of your life? And if you find out that there's a pilot of life who has complete control over everything, you don't feel safe. You don't feel, "Oh, thank goodness." You're offended by it. Food for thought. Let's see now. It's also suggested, I'm getting off on some topics, but I don't care if this video goes for 45 minutes. This is the end of the week. It's suggested in other comments on YouTube that this belief that we have, besides being gutless, is leads people to sin, right? As though telling people that there's a pilot in charge and that the pilot is in total control of this airplane, that, you know what, when I hear that, the first thing I want to do is rob a bank. When I hear that there's a pilot in total control of this machine called life, and this machine called me, and this machine called my life, when I hear that, the first thing I want to do is spray paint somebody's house. Yeah, the first thing I want to do is steal a can opener from Walmart. God, I just want to sin so bad. Yeah. The implication that this belief of God in total control of his universe causes people to sin? It's what you would call illogical. In fact, if that's the case, then we should find that the people who believe in free will, or even a limited free will, we should find that these are the most moral people on the planet. These are the most well-behaved people on the planet. Well, let's take Christians. Oh, they all believe in free will. They don't believe that there's a pilot in charge of everything. No, they're perfectly comfortable taking the yoke of their own lives, not realizing that if they even had it for a second, they think they have it. If they even had it for a second, they would crash. It'd be like them taking the yoke of the 767. They'd freaking crash it in 5 minutes. And yet they, "I want to control my own life." My God. So we're talking about all of Christianity who believes human free will. Tell me, does the belief in human free will then lead to moral fortitude, lead to not sinning? I think that's a rhetorical question. And I would even posit to you that the belief in a pilot of my life who controls everything, thank you very much, but still lets me have a feeling of controlling everything, just like my dad. My dad, when I was a kid, you know, he'd be driving the car and I was maybe 6 or 7 years old. And I would say, Daddy, I want to drive the car. So he would let me scoot over. You didn't have to worry about seatbelts back then. And he would let me touch the steering wheel while he was driving the car. And I'm like, ooh, ooh, I'm driving the car. I'm driving the car. And my dad's probably rolling his eyes. Yeah, kid, sure. Yeah, you're driving the car. We have our hands on the wheel and we think, ooh, we're steering our lives. We're steering our lives. No, God's just letting you touch the steering wheel while he steers it. He's letting you participate in it. He's giving you this wonderful feeling of feeling like you're in control, but you're really not. But it's fun to touch the steering wheel. It's fun to go through life and make these decisions and do things and feel the drama, not know who's going to win the Super Bowl. That's fun. Not know who's going to win the Super Bowl. Not know what's going to happen to you today. That's kind of fun. Because your day seems full of potential, when actually God decided the whole thing ahead of time. All your days were numbered and decided, and everything in them was decided ahead of time. But God wisely keeps that information from you so that you can have a little fun touching the steering wheel and not being sure where the car is going. He knows where it's going, but you don't. I think that's kind of fun. All right, I had a revelation before I get to the robot thing. This is going to be fun. But before I get to that, I had another thought about the word first in Romans 11:35, like who gives to God first. Now, I want you to know that I came to this revelation totally on my own. God did not give this to me. I was told, I was in one of my limited free will moments. You know, because God sometimes decides to intervene, sometimes not decides to intervene. He comes in and out. God does, when he sees things might be going askew, he jumps in, redirects it, then he sits back again, watches you do your thing. And, well, it was in one of these times when I was in my limited free will realm, I came up with this idea, and I do not thank God for this thought, because God had nothing to do with it. I was in my limited free will mode. So I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite and thank God that he gave me this revelation. That'd be hypocritical. No, I completely credit myself with this. I did this independently. This was a thought I had, so God didn't control it. I controlled it. I controlled this thought. So I take full credit for it. And if I hear anyone crediting God with what I'm about to tell you, I'm going to have to smack you. I'm going to have to smack you. I came up with this when I was in my realm of limited free will. So please, indulge me. I told you yesterday, Romans 11:35, Paul sets out the only way that anyone can prove that the all of Romans 36, that is all is out of God, all is through God, all is into God, the only way that all could not mean everything, including your actions, including your thoughts, aren't your actions and thoughts included in all? Of course, not just the physical creation, but everything. It's all included. The only way that can't be true is if there is somebody in the world who has given something to God first that he didn't have, or if someone has informed God of something that he didn't know. Romans 11:34 and 11:35, leading up to 11:36. So I was thinking about this word first, totally on my own. No influence from without. I was not influenced by anything. Not God, not Satan, not the fact that I was born into mortality, had nothing to do with my thought whatsoever, had nothing to do with the fact that I was made a sinner through Adam. No, this is wisdom I came up with by myself. My own brain pushed into my consciousness. I don't know how it happened. It's a personal miracle, personal miracle. Nothing to do with God. So, because I was in my limited free will time. So, Paul says, who gives to him first and it will be repaid him in Romans 11:35. I had this thought, independent thought, and it was the word first. Who gives to God something first and then God gives it back to them? Because this is how Paul follows it through. You give something to God completely unique, and this is the insistence of those who believe in free will and even limited free will, who think that they must have a free realm in order to give God something so that God can congratulate them. For why would God congratulate somebody for something he did in them? So according to these folks, there has to be this independence. So in other words, they must be giving God something first. You have to be giving, in that situation, you have to be giving God something first. And then he gives it back to you. Does anyone see how audacious it is to assert this? That we give to God something first? But that's the way it must be if we're going to believe the limited free will crowd. So the truth is actually the opposite. And this answers the Romans 9:19 crowd, the protesters, who say, why is God judging those who he makes hard? Why is God rewarding those in whom he does the good works himself? So the truth is that God gives to us first. You see, the truth is the opposite of what Paul is saying. Paul is giving a ridiculous situation. It's rhetorical. The ridiculous situation is who gives to God first and God gives it back to him. The obvious answer is nobody. So the obverse is the truth, that God gives to us first and we give back to him. There it is. God gives everything to us first, everything. Whether it's a thought, yesterday I proved to you that repentance, the changing of mind, is something that God gives. God gives that. He changes people's minds. God changes people's minds. So God gives to us first. This is true in the realm of faith. God parts to each the measure of faith, and then we give it back to God. God parts faith to us, Romans 12:3, Philippians 1:29, it is graciously granted you to be believing on him. We get that first. Because how can a creature, Romans 3, no one's righteous, no not one, they have all gone out of the way, no one is seeking God. How can a creature like that give something to God first? So God gives the faith and then we give it back to him and he's pleased. Oh, he likes it because it's the only way it can happen. Same with love. God gives us love, gives it, implants us in it, active. Because love is a fruit of the Spirit, not a fruit of an independent thought. I shall repeat that. Love is a fruit of the Spirit, not an independent thought or emotion. And then, after we give God the love he gave us, we give him the faith that he gave us, we give him the work that he did in us, he turns around and congratulates us. That's the opposite of what the free willers think, that we give something to God first and he gives it back to us. That's a cartoon. That's absurd. That's a grotesqueness. That's a monstrosity. That's a Frankenstein. That's an evil. That's a darkness. And that's the height of ignorance. That's the height of creature ignorance. It's the height of a creature saying to God, I am above the Creator. As Paul says in Romans 1, verse 21, knowing God, not as God do they glorify or thank him, but vain were they made in their reasonings, and darkened is their unintelligent heart. All this limited free will talk is vain reasonings. It's a result of unintelligent hearts, darkened hearts. Because knowing God, not as God, and remember God means subjector, one who subjects people, just like the airline pilot subjects everyone to the fact that he wants them to get to on the ground safely. Oh, God, as the pilot, he's a benevolent pilot. Everybody knows that the pilot of the 747 that you are on, it's his intention to land the plane safely. He wants to land the plane safely. I mean, he has a date with the flight attendant planned after the flight. To hell with keeping you safe. he's gonna go to the bar after the flight with the flight with a blonde flight attendant. He don't want to crash this plane. It's in his best interest. And by the way, if he crashes the plane, you know, even if he lands it in the ocean, people survive, he's probably gonna lose his license. He has every intention and every desire to land that plane safely. He wants you to live. He wants himself to live. He wants the blonde flight attendant to live. So he's a good pilot. He's a moral pilot. He's a fine pilot. Here's a newsflash. Not for all of you, but for some. God is a benevolent pilot. Oh, yes, he controls everything, but he's a benevolent controller. He wants things to go well. He doesn't want to crash the system. He doesn't want to bring the Aeonian times to a horrible conclusion, such as most of humanity is tortured in hell for eternity. He wants this thing to land nicely. He wants a happy ending. Don't you want somebody like that in total control? Or do you want to take the yoke for 5 minutes? And would anybody on the freaking plane trust you to do that? The fact that you would trust yourself is proof of an unintelligent, darkened heart. Someone who gives God the lip service but doesn't recognize that he's the subjector of everything. You gave God something first. You gave God something first that he didn't have. And then he gives it back to you? That's an abortion of thinking. It's the other way around. And now, robots. My argument for 25 years, 27 years against people who say, Martin Sander, you're just saying we're robots. My answer has always been, you're way too kind. You're giving yourself much, much too much credit because robots blink and they move and they make noises. Actually, the scriptural analogy of God's relationship to humanity is a potter and the clay. Romans chapter 9, the potter and the clay. That's the divine illustration of God's relationship to humanity and how he deals with humanity. And the problem is, I'll just maybe use puppets instead of robots. It's the same thing. We're not puppets, we're not robots, we're not clay. Here's the deal. There's an assumption made on both ends of this, on the divine end and the human end. I'll start with the puppets on the human end. The reason people say we're not puppets, and the reason they say that Martin Sander, if you're correct, and that God is controlling everything, we're just puppets. We're only puppets. You're saying we're puppets. If God's in control of everything, we're puppets, we're puppets, we're puppets. Why do they say that? This is why. I got this figured out to a T. They say that because in the human realm, the only thing humans can completely control are puppets, robots, and clay. There are other things like wood, and you understand. It's the only thing humans can total. We can't totally control another person. You can't make another person do exactly what you want to do. You wish you could. Yeah, that'd be fun. But you can't because you're a human being. So in our little human minds, the only thing we can control completely, I'll use just one example, is a puppet. So, Martin Sander, if you're telling us that God controls everything, well, therefore, and there's the mistake right there, therefore, oops, watch what you're going to do next, watch what happens next, therefore, we must be puppets. You see, they're making a lateral move. They're basing what they know of the human experience. They're transferring their human experience to God with a parallel move as if it's parallel, as if God has the same limitations we do. And they're saying, well, if you're saying that God is therefore in total control, we must be puppets. Man, you just saddled God with the same problems you have. And in fact, it's a classic case, as I said yesterday, of projection. Where you project the human condition onto the deity. Do you really want to do that? Do you really think that's viable? Here's the thing. When God says he's the potter and we're the clay. Oh, first of all, for all of you who think you're puppets, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to Amazon.com. Maybe I'll put a link down here to Amazon where you can buy a puppet. If you don't already have one in your house, I guess any inanimate object will do. An empty paper towel roll. All right, let me go. I have an empty paper towel roll right over here. I'm going to go get that, and I'm going to continue this illustration. One moment, please. Oh, I was under the mistaken idea that this was an empty paper towel roll. Actually, it's not. It's got a few more things on it. I'll fix that. It's too powerful with sheets. Too powerful. All right, now, Martin Zender, if you say that God's in control of everything, then we must only be empty cardboard paper towel rolls. That's all we are. Because the only thing we can control in this life, totally control, are robots, puppets, clay, and cardboard paper towel rolls. Therefore, God has the same problem. Therefore, we are paper towel rolls. We're paper towel rolls. That's what you're saying. That's your doctrine, Martin Zender. Okay, now I want you to take a paper towel roll. I'm not going to put the Amazon link here. You don't need a puppet. We'll do it with this. Stare in the mirror. Put the paper towel roll next to yourself. Look at yourself, then at the paper towel roll. Look at yourself, then the paper towel roll. Yourself. Tell me if you're a paper towel roll. Tell me if you see any vital differences between you and the paper towel roll. Then see if you can tell me again with a straight face that you're nothing but a paper towel roll. No, you're not. I'll preempt the demonstration because I'm doing it right here, and you can see that I am not a paper towel roll. What am I? I'm a sentient human being. I have moods. I have feelings. I make decisions. I cry. I laugh. I drink tequila. I go to bed. I have emotions, thoughts, dreams, hopes, anxieties even. This paper towel roll has none of these things. It has no anxieties. It does not drink tequila. It has no hopes, dreams, or expectations. But guess what God is trying to tell us when he uses the example of potter and clay? This is what he's saying. As easily as you can control a paper towel, an empty cardboard paper towel roll, as easily as you can control that, I can control sentient human beings. Ooh! That's something that we can't do. We can't control sentient human beings. That's out of our league. That's above our pay grade. The only thing we can control are empty cardboard paper towel rolls. But God is telling us that sentient human beings are to him like cardboard paper towel rolls are to us. Seems to me, this is just Zender talking, that God is greater than us. And then he's definitely telling us something in Romans with the potter clay thing. It doesn't mean that you're clay. You missed the point completely. If you're looking at the potter and the clay analogy and saying, I'm not clay, yeah, that's my point. You're not clay. Now you're making my point. There's also a metaphor used in Isaiah chapter 10 where God says, shall the axe wield itself above the one wielding it? Shall the axe boast over the one who's holding it, who's working with it? Martin Zender, are you saying we're an axe? Holy cow, you're missing the whole point. No. We're not an axe, and we're not a piece of clay. The point is that God is able to manipulate and control human beings, sentient human beings with feelings and emotions and consciousness and motions and thoughts. He's able to control us as easily as a man wields an axe or a potter works with clay. That's the message. It doesn't mean we're clay. It doesn't mean we're an axe. Look in the mirror. Are you an empty paper towel roll? Write me back and let me know if you are. No. But God is in total control of your vessel, whether you like it or not. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. This is the fact. You'll find out someday that it was the truth all the time. I'm trying to introduce you to that now so that you can rest in it. It comes back to the relative and the absolute. You know, relative to other people and other things, you do things and you act a certain way, but absolutely, everything happens because God is manipulating you like I manipulated this empty paper towel roll. And again, you can see where the mistake was made. The mistake was made with the word therefore. The only thing I can completely control is an empty paper towel roll. Therefore, up, boom, watch your step. Therefore, if you're telling me God's in total control, then I must be nothing but a paper towel roll. An empty paper towel roll. An empty cardboard paper towel roll. Now to the other end of the spectrum. That's the human end. And the sin, that is the missing of the mark there, is assuming that God has the same disabilities we have. We can't control human beings completely. That would be terrible. That would be evil. That would be awful. Therefore, God doesn't do it. But you forgot. He's not a tyrant. He's benevolent. And he has everyone's good in mind. Okay. Covered that with the airplane analogy. Now, to the God sight. I mentioned this before. I'll hammer it now, and I'll close for the week. What a week it's been. I've enjoyed every moment of this. People think, again, that any human, if a human takes total control of something, and it really bosses people around, and just lords it over them, we call those people a control freak. People who control everything or want to control everything, they're a control freak. So if we human beings become control freaks by wanting to manipulate everything or claiming that we do manipulate everything, therefore, there's the bad word again. Ooh, that's a bad word. That's worse than the F word and the S word and the A word. Therefore, God would also be a control freak. Whoops. You're projecting what you would do. If you had all power, you'd be a control freak. And you're projecting that on God. You're projecting it on a God who is the only being in the universe. He's not a being, he's a God, who claims to control everything. But you would deny that. He claims it in Romans 11:36. Everything comes out of me, exists through me, even actions, and ends in me. Who the hell says that? Who the hell says that? Does anybody on earth say that? Jesus Christ doesn't even say that. All is not out of him. All is through him, but not all out of him. 1 Corinthians 8:6. Not even Jesus Christ says that. But here's a God who says it. It's like, whoa, either he's a lunatic or that's what he is. Like they say, it ain't bragging if you can do it. And he does do it. But we don't like it because we think God is like a man. And that if he controls everything, he must be a control freak. If we can only control puppets and paper towel rolls, then a God in total control of everything, that must make us robots, puppets, and paper towel rolls. It does not. What it does make us is creatures. What it does make us is beneficiaries. If only we could accept this truth, and only God can make you accept the truth. I know that, but I still put it forward. We're beneficiaries of the most benevolent pilot that could ever captain any ship. And if only we could trust God as much as we trust pilots of 747s? How's that? How about we learn to trust God as much as we trust pilots of 767s, as much as you would hesitate to even touch the yoke of a 767. It's hard to believe that you would not only touch the yoke, but want to take the yoke and throw the pilot out of the cockpit of your own life.